Hey guys, welcome to Talking Some Sands. This is Jake. I've got Alex with me, and we brought back Derek.
What's up?
What's going on, guys?
Glad to have you guys back. So before we get really into the episode, I'll talk about a little bit about I guess you call it mini rebrand we did. So we threw up a new logo. A friend of mine did it for me, and it's honestly one of the nicest logos I've ever seen for a podcast. Biased maybe, but I kind of really like it. I also threw up a little bit of a theme song. If everything goes according to plan, it will play at the beginning of this episode once I'm done editing. If not, I'm gonna sound like a liar. And another little thing is we're gonna try to minimize around the NHL talk now, because I noticed that our podcast episodes are usually around 2 hours, which for me, it's not really a problem. But for some listeners, they don't really want to listen to anything more than 45-ish minutes, I've noticed. So, and we're going to try to cut down time a little bit by just focusing on just the facts. Anyways, let's get right into it, and let's talk about the draft. So, before the draft, we all know the new jerseys were released, and first, I'm going to ask your guys your opinions on it.
Yeah, so I'll step in. I think the rebrand, when we finally got to see the official product, it's what we were expecting. It looks really, really good. I thought it looked better as a full uniform, like when we seen, I think it was Shabbat and Tkachuk and some others in there as well. I think Nick Paul and Connor Brown putting out the full uniform. I thought the blacks look phenomenal. And the whites too. So I'm super excited about the rebrand. I think it's finally a look that a lot of people will get behind. And I've already seen, so many people buying these jerseys already and posting pictures. So it's a good move by the organization.
Yeah, I second that. I mean, they tricked us into watching the news a little bit, but that's fine. I personally thought it was really cool how they revealed it. I mean, it was kind of what we expected. The black ones looked so good. The white ones looked clean as heck too. And I do like how, like every person I've talked to, pretty much, like whether they're a Sens fan or not, really liked the new jerseys and the new logo. So that's nice to see some positivity there. But I definitely give the rebrand like a top tier grade from the Sens there. That was classy.
Yeah, I really, really like the jerseys. It's for those who may not know, it's basically the old black jerseys from, I guess, is it the 90s or early 2000s, but modernized. So there's a couple things different about this thing I've noticed different is, like, obviously the collar, the new Adidas collars and new shoulder pads Adidas. That's one big difference for me. But it's like it's expected because it's modernized, right? Another thing is the old jerseys, the new jerseys have the red stripe on the like on the bottom of the jersey, like on the bare bottom, like on the bottom of the jersey, right? And on the old ones, like the old ones that these are based off of, the red line, I guess you could call it, is just raised a little bit, so there's a little bit of black underneath it. So that's another notice difference I noticed. I love the jerseys though; like they're nice. Look, these are probably one of the nicest jerseys the Sens have ever worn. Probably the nicest, in my opinion.
Yeah, I could agree with that.
Yeah. I have a little bit of gripe though. It's not with the jerseys itself, but it's how we revealed it. Like as you mentioned, we kind of got tricked into watching the news, which kind of sucks. But like whatever, it's if we watch the news, whatever. But like we watched, I think it was 25 minutes in, which is not the other world. But for those who don't have cable like me, I use NHL Live to watch hockey games. That's why I consume my hockey. I don't watch TV, so I wasn't able to watch the reveal live. I kept trying to find feeds of the news like on CTV.ca. I couldn't find nothing, so I was really I was like, mind my language, but I was shit out of luck. I couldn't really see it. I had to rely on Alex sending me a video of it live.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like maybe the news wasn't the best route, but I mean, I guess like their focus was to kind of target that Ottawa
Yeah.
audience, right? So
I
like
understand why I did it for sure.
yeah.
It was well done, but I would also done a Twitter live or something like that up to 12th, or I mean, maybe even a YouTube live off of a team social media team. That's what I would have done, but it's still a really nice jersey.
Fair, fair.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts, Derek, on how you revealed it?
Yeah, so again, I'm an out-of-town Sens fan, so just like you said, Jake, I don't have a local news channel that I could bring up, so I was just kind of following along with the reveal on Twitter just prior to the draft, but I didn't have a huge problem with it, to be honest. I mean, it's not something that we're really going to remember anyway, and the team, like the official Twitter released a nice little video.
Like right after that.
Yeah, so I really, really liked the video that they released. I thought it looked really good. And then I seen some, you know, some feeds after that people shared with me. So I didn't have a huge problem with it.
Yeah, it was super nice, yeah. Anyways, let's move on to the next topic. So let's talk about the draft. So Ottawa had 3 first-round picks, a bunch of second-round picks, and some third-round picks. We had a bunch of picks. Going into the night, we had, like, I think it was 12 picks going into the draft. Obviously, we made some trades. Well, let's talk about our first pick, Timmy Stützle. So, my reaction, I'm going to see my reaction after you guys. You guys go ahead.
Yeah, you want me to step in here and
go right ahead?
Go. All right, so... Yeah, my initial reaction, I mean, I just assumed we knew what the pick was going to be after LA went and picked Byfield. So, I mean, there was no real surprise. But then they went to, they cut to Alex Trebek and entered like a Jeopardy scene. And I thought that was one of the most incredible things that the organization has accomplished in the last little while. It was just such a perfect moment. I don't think Timmy Stützle knows really who Alex Trebek in Jeopardy is, because I think it's just a Canadian show, but it was still just a terrific way to introduce the pick, and hopefully one that he's going to remember for a long time. The other thing that I loved was that he revealed his jersey number when he put it on, so I thought that was a special touch as well.
Yeah, I remember to have the same sentiments there. I mean, if you guys have watched my YouTube videos, Tim Stützle was the player I raved about the most. So I'm super excited to get him. Obviously, it wasn't much of a surprise, but there was still that, you know, just a part of me that was like, are they going to go off the board here? But I was pretty confident he was going to be the pick. But that Alex Trebek way was really cool. So. And number 88 is fantastic. That's a wicked number.
Yeah, I like the number. So, honestly, I'm going to go a little bit later, a little sidetracked on this. I am so glad I recorded my initial reaction to the pick as it was happening. As soon as LA went, as soon as Ottawa pick was in, I started recording, and I am so happy. The Alex Trebek was so unexpected. It was great. Like I was seeing tweets come in as I was recording, so I knew Alex Trebek was coming in, but I didn't know how it was going to happen. I thought he was just going to come to the podium and say the senator selects, right? But no, when I saw the whole Jeopardy skit, that was just phenomenal. And seeing Stützle smiling, putting the Sens hat and Sens jersey on, was just that for me. That was a highlight of the draft. That was really, really nice. Like, it was sick. And I like his number 88. He said he wanted to wear number 8, but he respects that he was retired and all that. So he went with his next number, 88, which I like. It's a nice number.
Can't really, yeah, and believe it or not, the Alex Trebek thing was a Eugene Melnick kind of move. So that kind of
Melnick's decision.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of surprised me when I seen that. I was like, all right, well, like, as much as we, you know, if you're a Sens fan, you obviously know the gripe we all have with Melnick, but I thought that was a cool little touch just from coming from him. So,
yeah, he still has a friend in Ottawa. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Probably one of his only ones, but
yeah. All right, what do you guys think he'll provide to the lineup, and how quickly should he be in the lineup?
Yeah. So, I mean, Dorian's touched on it. They're definitely going to give him every opportunity to make the NHL out of training camp. They really haven't provided, at least to this point, a whole lot in terms of veteran presence from free agency. So I think we can expect to see a really young lineup. One of the things that they did mention is that they'll probably start him on the wing and maybe venture him over to center when he gets more comfortable and confident on the wing. So I think he'll slot behind Brady Tkachuk on the left side on that second unit, whatever it ends up looking like. And I think it'll be a nice spot for him. But if he is struggling, there is that opportunity to either send him back to Germany where he could play with Mannheim, or they could keep him in the AHL and develop him down in Belleville and get him acclimated to the smaller ice surface and the NHL kind of pro style game.
Yeah, I agree there too. I do think if he doesn't come into the NHL this year, I think he'll still play something next year. He has the tools and the talent. It's just going to be more of a matter, I think, of getting acclimated to the North American ice instead of the European ice. But I think you'll probably see him jump in this season, at least for, you know, the start of the season, and kind of if he isn't doing well, then just kind of send him down to get Tom Smith and Belleville. But I do see him start on the wing. Like Derek mentioned, Dorian came out and literally said, we're probably going to start him on the wing. So that's pretty much how it's going to go. And I think he has the potential to be a top line forward. So definitely looking forward to seeing him play.
All right, this is where I'm going to speak a little differently with you guys. As I do agree, he's going to start in the wing. I for sure think he's going to play this year. And like, I think he's going to start in the wing for training camp and preseason. But as preseason goes along, we're going to see him transition slowly to center. So he'll start at center for the first actual game. I think he's just waiting for the preseason, just to get him acclimated and get him used to the different ice surface. Because I think that's the best move for me, because I've been watching a lot of Tim Stutz highlights and videos the last few days. I can get more of a better view on his game now that I know he's a senator. And he plays best as a center, in my opinion. Like, he's a great left winger. He can play left wing if you need him to. But I think his presence is felt most at center.
Yeah, I think he's a natural center. But just the fact that he's coming over from, you know, playing in Europe and coming over to play in the North American game, playing center is kind of a bit, you know, tougher to jump right into on a smaller ice surface right away. So I think that's why they're planning on starting on the wing, kind of getting used to center there. But I think he will be a center throughout his career.
Yeah, full time he's going to be a center, but I think he's going to start up as a left winger to just get used to the ice and all that. Anyways, what do you guys think is his AHL ceiling?
Yeah, well, he's his ceiling. I mean, he's been compared to Patrick Kane quite a bit, and now he's wearing Patrick Kane's number. So I'm going to go with, like, I see him as a 90 to 100 point NHL player when he reaches his ceiling. Now, I'm not suggesting he's going to be an 80 to 90 point player this season. I think he has potential to make an impact this season, you know, somewhere in the 40 to 50 point range would be a good first season for Timmy Stützle. But long term, yeah, I see him as a 90 to 100 point player.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a top line player. I see him as a number one center, so that's pretty much how it goes. I think the 90 to 100 is probably about right. I wouldn't be surprised if it's more around 80-90, but I think he's going to be a top center in the league. So
I agree with you guys. I think he's going to be top center in the league. Regardless of his history, he's going to play center or wing. He's going to be that elite player. Like, he's going to be 80, 90, maybe even 100-point player once he's fully developed, I guess you could say. But I think he's going to do a little bit better than you guys think. I'm going to predict 50, maybe even 60 points as a rookie. It all depends who he plays with, what his role is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he has the jump already, because he's already played with men. So it's not like, you know, like if you took a Quentin Byfield, for example, who's, you know, dominating the OHL, but he was playing against 16, 17-year-olds.
Yeah.
Or like he was playing against like 30, 20, you know, 25, 26-year-olds. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think Byfield takes a little longer. I think Byfield takes near a year or two. All right. So here I've got a link from a skittering report of Timmy Stützle from a friend of mine, Joshua Tesler, great great scout, great writer. He actually started me out just in the hockey journalist world, I guess you call it. He founded a site called Puck 77 a couple years ago. Eventually moved on from it, but hey, he's a great guy, a great guy to kick his brains and all that. I messaged him letting him know I'm gonna mention him and all that, but I forgot. He hasn't answered me. But anyways, yeah. So let me see if I can find it here. If I can find it. Is that? Do you guys have the?
Yeah. Look to? Yeah, I've got it up. I mean, it's you know, everything we're hearing about the kid is highlighted in the scouting report, from you know his elite level playmaking skills, what he brings from the half wall on the power play, his agility, which I think is probably his best skill, just that ability to turn on a dime and elude defenders. The thing I love most about Tim Stützle is his compete level. Like he doesn't shy away from the puck whatsoever. He wants the puck more than anyone I've probably ever seen as a kid. He's always like, you'll see him, he's constantly circling the zone. He does this a lot on the power play, even without the puck. He'll circle the zone and he'll tap his stick the whole time because he wants to be the guy. He wants to be the playmaking machine that he can be.
Yeah, I mean, I just rave about the kid. He's probably my favorite player in the draft. He just can do everything. He can, his skating's fantastic. Like you said, his compete level, he has a motor, just never stops. So you'll never see him, like, you know, just kind of coasting through the ice. He'll always be, you know, either skating 100 miles an hour to get to the puck or 100 miles an hour with the puck. So take your pick.
he'll always be the hardest working player out there. That's what I like about his game. One thing though, I did notice a little bit. He needs to use his speed to his advantage, because like he has his skill to handle himself effectively, but his strength isn't necessarily there yet, which he knows that. So he needs to use his speed a little bit better to adapt to the game, which he does, but it can always be better, you know?
Yeah, I think one of the things, you know, if we're going to critique him, offensively, I think he needs to drive the middle of the ice a little bit better. Right now, at least playing on a bigger ice surface in Germany, and even at the World Juniors, I mean, he's playing against younger kids there. He tends to use the outside a little bit, and some of that isn't going to transfer to the NHL right away, because guys are much bigger, much stronger, and much better at boxing people out. So he's got to find more creative ways of driving the middle of the ice, and that's going to open up a lot more scoring opportunities. The other thing is his shot. He doesn't have like an elite level shot yet. I think he opens himself up for great shots, but at least at this point in time, it's something that he's going to have to work on.
Yeah, I think the biggest knock that I have on him is pretty much – all that. I also think he tends to do a little too much with the puck sometimes. Yes. And I don't know if that's because, you know, his teammates in Mannheim aren't as, you know, skilled. I didn't watch a lot of Mannheim games, but he just seems to hold on to the puck a little too long sometimes and tries to like find like, the perfect play to, you know, just dish it in front of the net and hope for a rebound type thing. So hopefully he can work on that a little bit. But
he's like the epitome of a high risk, high reward player. Like he will try something special pretty much every time he's on the puck. So your eyes naturally go to him. I had the pleasure of getting some tape on Stützle this year, a lot of shift by shift analysis. And that's what they use to scout the players.
Yeah.
If they can't make it there. So I have like more information on Stützle than any other player in this draft.
That's pretty sick.
I think, if you read through the scouting report, like one of the words they use to define his game is cocky and confident, but in a good way, they say. So I think that's a perfect way to describe it. I mean, he's going to try something special. He's going to try to break the guy's ankles in front of him. And that's what makes him so fun to watch. But at times it's his decision-making that needs work. So at the NHL level, he's going to have to learn, much like Erik Karlsson did, when you go and when you don't go. And I think that's why they're going to start him on the wing because it's a little bit more detrimental to put a guy like that in the middle of the ice. If he makes a mistake in the middle of the ice, the turnover is coming the other way, and it's going to hurt you a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that and why they'd start him on the wing, but that makes lots of sense. So I can see why they're doing that. I think he's going to be like, I think Ottawa needed this kind of player. Obviously, you know, high end forward that can bring a high end skill. And I think he's just going to be a perfect fit for the Senators.
Yeah.
That's a really good, that's really well put. Honestly, that was really well put, Derek. Couldn't have said it any better.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to pick number 5. So the Senators opted to choose as they believe the best defenseman in the draft. They picked Jake Sanderson at number 5. And my one question is before I say my opinion on this, why do you think the Senators opted to choose defense over forward at this question here?
I'm very curious to see what your answer is, Derek, because I know you had him at 5 for the longest time.
Yeah, so Jake Sanderson, someone that I was harping on Twitter for a long time, and I took a lot of heat for it from a lot of people that quite frankly wanted 2 forwards instead of Jake Sanderson. And fair enough, there's a lot of elite level talent that the Senators might have passed up to take Jake Sanderson. He's a longer project, so I mean, he's going to the University of North Dakota. He's probably going to be there for at least this season, possibly next season, and we'll see him in a couple of years. So I could see why people were hesitant to take someone who's going to take the longer road, so to speak, to the NHL. But at the same time, Jake Sanderson is the best defenseman in this draft, I think, hands down. You know, you're sacrificing maybe 10 points from Sanderson to Drysdale. But what you're getting is someone who's a complete player. I mean, this kid brings it all. His defense is, I mean, this is quoted from some scouts, is the best they've ever seen. I mean, his ability to track one-on-one defense, to track players in the neutral zone, is second to nobody in the last 5 years. So, I mean, Jake Sanderson, I think there should be a lot more hype around this player. This is the player that Ottawa really needed to pick here.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that, because I was on the verge of we need 2 forwards no matter what. I've been pretty much that the way the whole way. But after Sanderson was taken, I wasn't like super upset, but I was a little shocked. But the more I look into Sanderson, I think the Sens did make the right move here. First of all, Sanderson hadn't really shut down D guys since Chris Phillips, and they need that. They have a lot of defensive prospects, but they're all, you know, like 2-ways or offensive guys. They don't have that shutdown guy that can be there on, like, you know, the PK or, you know, the last minute of the game and shut down. So I think, and obviously defense wins championships. Everybody knows that. And that's how you do a rebuild, in my opinion, is build from the net out. So I think this is, the more I look into it, the more I'm okay with this pick, and I'm really looking forward to see what Sanderson can bring to the team.
All right. Before I say my opinion, I'll just tell you, Alex, we have had DFDs, I'll call them, since Phillips. We've had Mark Mathot and Dylan Mello.
Anyway, no, I know, but we haven't had, like, I wouldn't put them in the same category as Chris Phillips,
yeah, who was a
top-tier shutdown D-man.
Yeah. And those guys are not close to Jake Sanderson. Like,
oh, no way.
This is a number one defenseman we're talking about. Yeah, like,
this guy is number one defense, for sure.
He's not just a defenseman, guys. He's a two-way defenseman. Yeah, he plays a very modern game.
Yeah.
His mobility is – he's a better skater than Jamie Drysdale. That's something that people don't realize.
Yeah. I think that Jake Sanderson, honestly, the best comparable for him is Ryan McDonough. He plays a very, very similar game to Ryan McDonough, from my eyes at least.
Yeah, that's a great comparable. I have Heiskanen as someone he models his team after.
Love to hear that.
The offense has to come a long way, so don't get me wrong here. But Heiskanen was projected the exact same as Jake Sanderson in his draft year. He was a defense-first guy, and he really learned the offensive game after that. Jake Sanderson's young, and he's just starting to hit that developmental curve. And if he becomes anything close to Heiskanen, guys, this is a home run.
Yeah, Heiskanen's one of my favorite defensemen in the league. He was so much fun to watch in the playoffs. That got me really excited now that you said that. I'm fired up.
Yeah.
If you ask Jake Sanderson who he models his game after, he'll tell you Miro Heiskanen.
Yeah.
All right. I'm down.
Okay. So yeah, my opinion is I'm not upset by this pick at all. At first, I was I was shocked, but hey, I believe that at five, the original guy to send you going to go for was Lucas Raymond, but he was picked up. So then they got their next guy in Jake Sanderson, and I'm not upset at all by the pick at all. I was just a little shocked at first because I heard a lot of things about them going for a guy like obviously Raymond being available or Holt or even. I heard some things about Jack Quinn being considered at five, would be a big reach. Don't get me wrong, would be a massive reach, but he was that pure goal scorer. But anyways, I am very happy his sense didn't go. Would you call it a safe pick? Would you?
Yeah, his floor is very high. He's a safe pick for sure.
Yeah, he is the best defenseman in the draft. Sure, you might sacrifice, like Derek said, 10, maybe even 20 points from a guy instead of taking a guy like Drysdale. But
you have that guy.
We already have two of those guys.
We have Brännström. We have Wolanin.
We have even Jacob Bernard-Docker.
Mm-hmm.
So you already have that guy. So you do need that guy to build around. Sure, points are nice and all, but points aren't the only thing. Sure, scoring goals will help you win a game. Another thing that helps you win a game is keeping the puck out of the net. And the best way of doing that is having a puck mover like Chabot or even Brännström paired with a guy like Sanderson who can help them be the best they can be
he's going to compliment them guys like Brännström and Chabot. I mean, he's not going to play with Chabot.
Yeah.
I see him likely playing with Brännström, but he's going to compliment them very well.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this also streams that, you know, the front office has a lot of faith in their forward prospects, like a Batherson, a Formanton, a Josh Norris, like that. So I think they have a lot of faith in those guys just by not taking another electric forward.
Yeah.
What do you guys think is his ceiling? We already talked about his style, but how good do you think he's going to be?
Yeah, he's projected to be someone who's, again, not going to produce. We're not talking about Cale Makar or Quinn Hughes or even Thomas Chabot. He's probably going to produce in the range of 35 to 40 points. But again, points aren't everything, as we've said. And he's going to play in every situation on the ice. So, you know, last minute of the game, who's on the ice? It's going to be Sanderson. On the penalty kill, who's going to be your number one defenseman on the PK? Sanderson. Probably second. We're probably talking about the second line power play unit if he can bring some of that offense.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the draft and they were saying he's second, pretending to be a second number two defender. So I mean, I'm perfectly okay with that.
Yeah, I think that after this is all said and done, the top three defensemen in Ottawa is going to be the best is going to be Chabot. Second best is going to be Sanderson. The third is going to be Brännström, in my opinion. I think that Sanderson is going to be one of the elites in the NHL. I think those three guys are each capable of the Norris Trophy. But I think Sanderson is, he's going to be elite. He's going to be that, I guess you could say, a Ryan McDonagh, but even better. I think he's going to be maybe even top five defense in the NHL, I guess. Would you? Is that generous?
That's pretty generous. We'll see. We'll see about that.
I think
hype the guy up, but I don't know that he necessarily has a high enough ceiling offensively to be considered like a Norris candidate. But he's going to be a super valuable player.
That is a very fair statement. Yeah, that's true. Norris really relies on points nowadays and offensive defense. But his two-way game is second, and I think he's going to be a two-way defenseman. I think he's going to be one of the best.
I know they compared him a lot to Ryan Suter on the Sportsnet feed, which, I mean, Ryan Suter in his prime was, like, phenomenal.
Oh, he's still really.
He's obviously a bit older now, but, and obviously, you know, you don't hear about him too much because he's buried in Minnesota. But when he was playing with – when he was Shea Weber's D partner, oh, man, he was – he like, a lot of people don't understand how good of a defenseman he actually is.
I'm going to stop you there because I'm not taking any Ryan Suter hate at all. Ryan Suter is still phenomenal. Of course, he's not what he used to be, but he's still one of the better defensive in the NHL. He's still one of the better ones. He's still amazing. He still gets Norris to throw people.
Yeah.
You need complimentary guys like that to allow your Brandstroms, your Shabbats, and your, you know, your offensive guys to maximize their potential. So
yeah, exactly.
Great pick.
All right, let's take a look at the other Sens picks. I don't really have a list here. I forgot to revise that and put all the picks on the list. But I
can bring them up real quick here.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. But yeah, the Sens eventually used 10 of their was it 12 or 13 picks they had.
They had 13 originally. They traded one for Josh Brown. Traded one for Matt Murray and then traded another to move pick up to get Klevin with Toronto. So they used 10 of 13.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
All right. Well, I have all the picks here if you want me to name them.
Awesome. Go right ahead.
So at 28 overall, they took Ridley Gregg. 33rd overall, they took Roby Järventi. 44th overall, like Derek just mentioned, they moved up. They traded to get Tyler Klevin, who, again, plays for North Dakota. And then at 61st overall, you got Igor Sokolov, which I know a lot of people are excited about. 71st overall, in my opinion, I think it was a huge reach, but again, I don't know much about him. They took a goaltender, Levi Merilainen. I can't pronounce his name, but 155th overall, they took Eric Engstrand from Malmo, and 158th overall, they took Philip Dow from Moncton, and 181st overall, their last pick, they took Cole Reinhardt from Brandon. So,
out of those picks, my favorite is honestly probably Roby Järventi or even Ridley Gregg. I know that they might not necessarily have the biggest ceiling, but I love the game they bring, and I love the presence they bring to the ice. And a lot of people like to hate on Dorian for quote unquote reaching his picks, but honestly, I like the way Dorian drafts. He drafts sure that you want to have skilled guys, but if you're gonna have like a guy who produces points like Ovechkin, but if that guy has a bad attitude, you don't want that guy in the locker room. I'm not saying Ovechkin has a bad attitude. It was a wrong parable, but like if you want to have a guy who has the skill level of Ovechkin, but not necessarily have the same level character, you're not really moving along because a team is a lot more than just players. A team is the connection to the locker room. So you want to have that guy who has the skill, yes, but who also has the character. And I like how the Sens really, really dive deep into that.
Yeah, and I mean, while we're on the subject of connections, that seemed to be one of a few common themes that Ottawa went with to draft their players.
Yeah.
Like there was always some sort of connection, you know, whether it was the University of North Dakota or someone that's played for TJ Smith in the past or someone who's linked to a current Senators player like Igor Sokolov and Drake Batherson. There was just a lot of links that could be made. But it's clear to me with looking at the list that we have in front of us that Ottawa is trying to become a really hard team to play against. They're almost building a team that resembles the St. Louis Blues, you know, a team that has a stacked up core of defensemen. But also up front has a lot of guys that teams just hate to play against.
Yeah, the pesky Sens are back.
Yeah.
I mean, I completely agree there. The connection thing was kind of, it was just kind of cool to follow through the draft. And like, I know people are, you know, looking way too deep into it, but, at this point, the NHL has been going on for years. So there's gonna be connections everywhere you look, but it was a cool storyline to follow. I do think people are sleeping on Ridley Gregg though. I do think maybe it's a bit of a reach at 28, but I think he's going to be, you know, he's going to be one of those players that are going to be super useful when the Sens eventually make the playoffs. And him and Igor Sokolov, in my opinion, are like, you know, they're big and physical that can aren't afraid to get into the corners there. I don't know if Sokolov's really a top tier player, but
we'll see. Huge.
He's huge. He's huge. That's the thing, right? He doesn't even need skill. He'll just skate and run people over. So
230 pounds, 6'4".
yeah. He's a big kid, but
yeah.
I think my favorite dropping out of all of them is I do like Tyler Cleven a lot, but I think that, you know, they moved up. They probably could have got him, but they didn't need to move up. But I've been a big fan of his for a while, just because his size, and you can't teach size. But it's gonna be tough to see where he fits in because our deep prospects are stacked. So,
yeah, I was dumbfounded a little bit by the Cleven pick when they moved up to take him. That was one of them that I was kind of scratching my head on, personally. Sokolov is a kid with an incredible story. If you're into it, check out TSN 1200's interview after the draft with Igor Sokolov. Seems like a really fantastic kid. And then Roby Jarventi is a player that's just coming into his zone again. And he's starting to light it up already. 4 points in 3 games now.
Yeah, seen that. That's fantastic.
So it looks like they're hitting, at least at the top of the draft, they're hitting on younger players. Ridley Gregg, another younger player, just coming into his zone. And he kind of resembles like a Brad Marchand, Brendan Gallagher type attitude. If he becomes anywhere close to those guys, that's a steal. I had Gregg at 25 on my personal list.
Fair. So right around where he should have been taken then.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I know there was a lot of criticism from the Roby Jarventi pick just because of the guys available still. But I think that like the Sens are known for, you know, taking a reach and kind of, you know, ending up with a very good player. So I do have faith there. And I personally had Roby Jarventi at 35. So I don't think it was too much of a stretch, but I know other people had him down a lot lower than I did. So
yeah.
I'm going to mute myself here. I've got a background noise. 1 second.
Wait. Yeah. But yeah. So, I mean.
Yeah. Honestly, when they picked Jarventi, I tweeted something out that said, who?
Yeah. I did see that. You actually got a lot of hate.
Delete your Twitter.
Yeah. But
yeah, no, that was just someone that I know that sent me right. that. I was laughing about it. But yeah, that was unexpected. I actually seen them taking JJ Paterka only because they drafted Tim Stützle. So I thought, yeah, they'll probably, you know, stick with that. Again, that common theme of drafting people familiar with other players. So I thought Paterka was like their number one target there. And then they went, like you said, off the board a little bit. But now that I look at Roby Jarventi, I hope I'm saying it right. Probably not. Now that I look at him, I love the pick. Like I've been following what he brings. He's a player with a lower floor. If he doesn't make it as a top six player, he's probably not an NHL player. But if he does, he's going to be a top six player. So I think it's a fantastic try at a home run swing there.
Yeah, I feel like the Sens normally end up like making those kind of picks. Like I feel like that's pretty much like a Senators pick. Like last year with Shane Pinto, no one expected them to take him there. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it seems to be a theme where they see a lot of potential in the guy and they just hope that he develops properly and that they'll have a steal.
Yeah. And if he does, then you've got Drake Batherson or you've got Alex Formanton or you've got, you know,
yeah, home exactly. runs
again, like on these later picks. So.
And I know Dorian's been getting a lot of hate for, you know, his way he manages the team, which I mean, rightfully so. But I do think Dorian is a very good at drafting and scouting. Obviously, you know, the shortened scouting staff making it a bit difficult. But I do think Dorian's a pretty good scout himself. So I kind of have faith in a bit of the picks they take.
Yeah, the scouting background definitely helps him out there. And I think Trent Mann is fantastic too. So,
yeah, he's a great guy too. I met him at one of the games last year when Barry was playing Kingston, and he's a great guy. He's very, very, very knowledgeable. If you ever see him around, I doubt you will, because I'm sure he's traveling everywhere. But
he seems very down to earth. Like,
yeah.
If there's anyone you want to make your PR like media appearances, I think it's Trent Mann. I mean, he calmed the whole fan base before the draft by going and speaking. kind of about, you know, what they were looking at doing going into the draft. And I think it calmed everyone down.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Trey Mann is a very good scout, and I have a lot of respect for them. So I understand where people are, you know, don't trust Dorian a lot, but this is one area that I do trust the Sens and their scouting staff is the draft.
Yeah, no doubt.
Jake, are you still good to go, or do you want me to continue?
I was just letting you guys talk there because you guys are having the ball there.
Well, we were just kind of stalled because we thought you had.
Oh, okay. All right. So the Matt Murray trade, how do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, Matt Murray. First off, we got him for Jonathan Gruden and 52 overall. We touched on this last time we talked, guys, and we were like, yeah, there's no way. Like, he's going to cost too much. It's probably just a tire-kicking situation, and I think we all agreed on that. And then there we go, like fireworks on day two. We get to acquire our number one goalie in Matt Murray. And I thought it was a great trade. Like, honestly, for 52 overall and Jonathan Gruden, really? For Matt Murray? Two Stanley Cups, 26 years old? Okay.
Yeah, I know. I know. I was one of the guys that said, I don't think we need another goaltender. But that's because I thought, you know, going on getting Matt Murray, I thought we'd have to play a trade or 28th overall pick. And I was like, eh, I don't know about that. But, you know, this trade I have no problem with at all. Jonathan Gruden, you know, he's a prospect, but he didn't look like he was trending very well, in my opinion. Plus 52nd overall. I mean, Sens probably would have taken Tyler Cleven there, to be honest. So he kind of just got to weigh it out.
Yeah. But,
yeah, I love that trade, and obviously I think we won it. I mean, Pittsburgh fans would argue because they cleared a lot of cap space, but
yeah. What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, exactly. I think the trade, we definitely won that trade for sure, but it all depends on the Matt Murray we get. I think with working with Pierre Groulx, in my opinion, one of the better goaltending coaches in the NHL. He helped us develop Craig Anderson. He helped to develop Craig Anderson being what he became to be. He helped develop Andrew Hammond, even though it was just for 1 year. He helped Andrew Hammond gain confidence. He helped Mike Condon those 2 years we had him. I think Pierre Groulx is a very underrated goaltender coach. I think he can do phenomenal things for Matt Murray. I think Matt Murray will become become the former, the old Matt Murray, I guess you could call it. And I think he's really going to flourish with the Sens. And they signed him to a four-year contract worth, and on annual average value, $6.25 million. And I'll start by saying, as much as I believe, and a lot of people believe, it might be rich, we have to get to the floor somehow. And if Matt Murray can be the Matt Murray we all know he can be, he will definitely be one of the team's best players, probably even be considered a team MVP. So I think it's, while the contract might not necessarily look the best right now, in a couple of years, it might look phenomenal.
Yeah, I think the other thing that we might be missing that the contract is doing for the Senators is it allows them to expose Matt Murray to Seattle at expansion without, you know, any potential that Seattle is going to claim that contract unless he has an outstanding year.
Yeah.
So really that allows us to protect Hogberg. So not a bad contract. It's interesting that it's a backloaded contract. I found that part a little bit interesting, but again, sign of the times, I guess, right now. They're figuring that they're going to get more money, revenue down the road. Not a bad, I mean, the contract is high. The annual value is high. To me, we just had to keep the term down under 5 years. So I think mission accomplished there. And like you said, we have just a ton of cap space. So it really doesn't impact them negatively in any way.
Yeah, I mean, I think the turn's perfect, to be honest. I mean, I maybe would have done three, but four is fine. 6.25 is a little rich for him, but at the same time, he's still, like, I've seen people, you know, on Twitter saying, oh, the Sens could have got Markstrom for less money, but I think the term here plays a lot into that, and I also think Matt Murray's age. If I'm going to pay $6.25 million to a goaltender, I'm going to pay a 26-year-old goaltender, not a 30-year-old goaltender that much, so... I think I think it's fine. And obviously the Sens need to get to the cap floor. The Sens can afford this kind of contract for a little bit, at least until they, you know, if Eugene keeps his promise and spends the cap, spends all the way to the cap. But I think it's a fine deal right now. So
yeah, exactly.
Later on, maybe like the second, like the two last years, it might come back to bite us. But I think like the first 2 years, I don't think it'll affect us that much.
Yeah. And I think that, like, before going into this, for sure, like, our goaltender of the future, for me, is either Sugard or Gustafson, one of those two. But at the same time, this gives both of those players and all of our goaltending prospects that safety net. If they don't necessarily turn out as well as we thought, we always have that guy to go back to now in Matt Murray, because he is still relatively young enough to be, I guess, our goaltender of now and the future if needed to be. So I like this move on multiple ways.
Yeah, and I hate to interrupt, and you know, I know this is supposed to be a Sens podcast, but it just sounds like Alex Pietrangelo is going to Vegas. So
yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Wow.
I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't know how they're managing that, but I'm sure we'll see soon.
I'm sure the Leaf fans will be just thrilled with that.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, yeah, someone else isn't going to Toronto. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's all I have to say from Matt Murray. And now I'm going to pass the table here to Derek for here for the next note here. The Alex. Wow.
I'll hold off here, but I'm sure me and Derek are going to have a bit of agreement on this part. So we'll see.
Anthony Duclair situation. Derek, take
it. Yeah. So here we go. Anthony Duclair.
Oh, boy.
This is something that I reacted to on Twitter. I was pretty vocal about it. Look, Duclair was one of my favorite players to watch last season. I thought he was absolutely electric. I love the, you know, him joining forces with the Hockey Diversity Alliance, and shout out to the Black Lives Matter movement. Anthony Duclair, here's where things kind of changed in my opinion. Reported yesterday by Brent Wallace, Duclair, who chose to represent himself, asked to be part of the long-term picture in Ottawa. He wanted to be a core member. He asked for $5 million over a five-year term. That's when talks between him and the organization took a complete left turn, and the organization was willing to offer $6.2 million over 2 years, which to me seems pretty fair. So the interesting point there, and my thoughts around it kind of changed, in that Duclair was asking for way too much term and money for a player who hasn't really proven himself. I mean, he scored a lot of goals. I don't want to take anything away from him. And he was, as I said, like a really entertaining player to watch. But he does have defensive deficiencies that he hasn't been able to rewrite yet. And you know, he's a high risk, high reward type player. So what do you guys think about the Anthony Duclair situation? I changed my mind a little bit on it, so I'm not as hot as I was.
I'm gonna be I know people probably know me as like super positive Sens fan, and I am, I always have been. But I deleted the tweet now, but at first when it happened, I said, I believe my tweet was, I promised myself 2 years ago that this team wouldn't take away my love for the game, blah, blah, blah. But sometimes it's hard. That's what I put.
Yeah.
Just because I Anthony Duclair was super fun to watch. And I know he had some consistency issues. He scored 11 goals in December and then zero, I think, in January, one in February, one in March. So,
yeah.
You know, he went like 3 months without scoring goals. But at the same time, it's, the thing I think that bothered me the most was the fact that, you know, like the Sens already get ripped on for not spending enough money. And now, you know, like they're arguably their player with the most goals they're not spending money on. So I was like, oh man, here we go again. But the way.
And it's the timing, guys. It's the timing. Well, like it happened right after we're celebrating the draft. We're celebrating Matt Murray. And then we get that news and it's like, are you kidding me?
I believe my friend actually commented on my Twitter post. He's like, LOL, what happened? You were so excited yesterday. And I'm like, well, welcome to being a Sens fan. But
yeah.
The more I look into it, like the more I'm like, okay, I get it. I see both sides of it. I see, you know, Duclair saying, hey, I had a career year, most goals I've ever scored. I want to cash in on this. But at the same time, the Sens are like, well, you know, like you had a career year in December, but the last 3 months, like, yeah, you didn't really do anything to prove it to us. So I see that. And I know a lot of I had a big argument with my buddy the other day. He's like, well, they should have disqualified him and tried to trade him then. And I'm like, I agree. Mm-hmm. But if you read the Haley Salvian Athletic, it sounded like they did explore the trade market a little bit, like not too much, but kind of see what they were going to get for him. And I feel like it probably wouldn't have been a good return. So maybe that's what happened. And obviously DeClaire still, you know, like he hasn't signed yet and he's still willing to come back to the Sens if everything works out. So it's not an end all be all. I think it was more DeClaire was betting on himself. The Sens say, okay, well, you can bet on yourself, but if we go to arbitration, you're going to get $4.5 million anyways, which I don't know if he's worth that much to begin with. So, and with that, like, people are like, oh, well, we went to arbitration, got the $4.5 million. I don't know if that contract's even tradable, a one-year $4.5 million for a player that has consistency issues. So maybe that's what the Sens were looking at that way. But I still don't, like, don't get me wrong, I try to be positive on all things Senators. I try to find the bigger picture, but I also understand that this is a very head-scratching move, and I'm still a little bitter about it, to be honest.
Yeah, and for me personally, it came after the Gudbranson signing too.
Yeah.
I think Gudbranson followed this, but that was another one that I was like, really, we're gonna spend $4 million on Gudbranson, who is a seventh defenseman, someone who's going to play on your bottom pairing, and you're not going to spend that money on your top goal scorer in Anthony DeClaire. So that fired me up again. It was like, oh my gosh, like, what is going on?
Yeah, and I get people saying this isn't like this is a money issue, but I don't know if it's necessarily a money issue that the center aren't willing to spend the money. I just don't think they think his value is that much at this point. That's what I'm gathering from everything. It could be completely off, and it could be just they don't want to pay him. But I mean, you just signed Murray and Branson for $13 million pretty much combined. So obviously they know they need to spend.
DeClaire has hopped around. I mean, this is what, his fifth or sixth team, and he's 25 years old. So he's hopped around quite a bit. He's 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably looking for stability. I mean, I think the biggest thing was having a team believe in him and make him kind of a core group, kind of a core member of their team. So I think that's really what he was looking for. But to represent himself, I think, was a mistake. I mean,
I agree.
When you're representing yourself, any criticism that the organization is going to say, because it's a contract negotiation and that's going to happen, he's going to take that personally. And I think that's why he bolted. But good luck, Anthony DeClaire, if you're looking for 5 years, $5 million on this market. You're not.
Yeah, that's a lot. And like the thing that still baffles me, though, and I know I just kind of addressed it, is why they didn't just give him a qualifying offer. But I guess that comes down to the qualifying offer, and then they'd probably have to go to arbitration, and at a 1 year, $4.5 million deal, which is likely what he would have got from what I'm hearing. I don't know if that's even tradable if all of a sudden he comes out and doesn't perform like he thought he was, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's exactly the case. I think they were worried about arbitration. They're worried about the reward from arbitration. But again, so that's why I was angry. Then they go and sign Gudbranson to basically the same amount of money. Although the real money is $3 million that they're paying Gudbranson, the cap hit is $4 million.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, it's still a really head scratching thing to me, and I still wanted, like, I'm still a little rattled about it, and I kind of want a bit more explanation. I know we won't get it from Ottawa. They won't go into too much detail. I don't even think they're clear going into much detail on what happened. But
Dorian stated the following, this is from Murray Pam at Full Press Hockey yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
DeClaire is assessing the market. We're assessing the market, and we'll see what comes of it over the next 2 days. So that's a quote from Dorian that almost reopens the door a little bit, as if to say, like, good luck, Anthony DeClaire. If you don't get what you're looking for, the offer is still on the table.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it seems like. It's like, okay, you're adamant, you're $5 million over 5 years. Go take a look. If you can get that somewhere, good for you, but we're not going to be the team to do it.
Yeah, and if Ottawa doesn't make any free agent signings other than, you know, the two kind of minor deals that they made, the money could still be there for Anthony DeClaire and the Senators to kind of meet in the middle, circle back, and maybe they'll be able to talk some sense into each other.
Yeah, it's just a really baffling situation, and it's I don't think it'd be the end we'll hear of it. I'm sure, as you know, I'm sure we'll hear some more on what actually went down. But I think it's a bit of like a both. I think it's a bit of on both. Like, I don't think it's fully the Ottawa Senators' fault. I don't think it's fully Anthony DeClaire's fault. I think it's more them kind of, you know, DeClaire's betting on himself, and the Senators are like, okay, well, go ahead, but we don't think you're worth this much type thing. Which I mean, any team would do. Like, it's not just the Senators not wanting to spend money. It's the sense, you know, like, it's a contract negotiation thing. Like you want to pay the less amount of money possible for any player to get the max value. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the mistake in here is him representing himself. I mean, you're gonna take some offense to that, especially if you're Anthony DeClaire, who's had to prove himself for five different teams and has, you know, this media perception that he's a player that takes nights off. He's probably feeling a little hurt by, you know, some of the negotiations.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the risk you take when you represent yourself. I mean, good for him for trying to do that, but that's why a lot of players have agents, because they don't want to deal with this negotiation part. They don't want to hear the negative side of it. They just want to get paid and play.
But, yeah.
And I do want to throw out there, this may be a little touchy subject, but I know I've seen some people on the Sens Twitter saying, well, the reason why DeClaire left is because Eugene Melnyk's a racist. Like, I don't know if we would.
Oh, no.
I mean, I don't know if we'll go that far.
No, sorry. I know. And that's what I'm trying to address. Like, you know, attacking someone's personal character because you don't like the way they're running the team isn't really appropriate. Like, there's no indications at all that that's the reason why he left.
That's ridiculous. I mean, they just signed Erik Edbranson, who is very vocal about, you know, the Black Lives Matter situation and, you know, someone who's been an advocate for Black players in the National Hockey League. So
yeah, I think
that's just, you know, that's just Twitter.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just seen that starting to gain some traction the other day, and I have to address this on the podcast when we get there. But that's just a ridiculous statement. Like that's attacking someone's character. And I mean, I'm all for people being negative and criticizing, but when you start going that far, like, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm gonna move on to the next part of our list. Let's talk about some juicy signings.
Yeah, no opinion on this DeClaire thing, eh?
I mean, I've got. You guys really – fine. You guys really said it great. I love DeClaire. He's one of my favorite players in the league right now. He was one of my favorite Senators this year, and I love what he did with the Sens. I love how he brings that character. I love how he brings that
that electricity, right?
Yeah, the extra oomph, yeah, exactly. The offense.
Yeah, I like the offense he brings. While he might be a little inconsistent, sure. You want to say that? Sure. I think he's also – I think he's also still growing into himself as a player, which at 24, you're not in your prime yet. So you gotta let that growing happen. Like, a player never stops growing. You might be 18 or you might be 45, like whatever, like 45, maybe a little old, but you're still always growing as a player. You never stop learning. You never stop growing. I think DeClaire is going to be better than he was. Like, if next year he's going to be better than he was last year. Every year he plays, I think DeClaire is going to be better than the last. And I think that, sure, I understand why right now the $5 million might be a little rich, but like, for a player who cares so much about Ottawa, like, if you guys read his statement, he wants to be a leader in the team. He wants to be a guy they build around. He wants stability. He wants to be a leader. He wants to be one of the guys, and I don't see why we shouldn't go back for him if the money is right and if the term is right and if the situation is right. I want to see Anthony DeClaire in an Ottawa Senators uniform next year. That's my thoughts on it, and I'm going to move on from now.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some free agency signings. So the Senators re-signed Matthew Pekka to a one-year $700,000 contract, two-way contract. He was a re-sign. He played for Senators last year after we acquired him in the trade deadline. And Alex, I'll let you talk about our connection to DeClaire, to Pekka, if you'd like.
Well, I mean, we both went to high school with him. I know you were a bit younger than I was, but he was in the grade above me. I'm not going to, you know, go into his personal life too much, but we went to high school together. He was in a grade above me. I had some classes with him. He played for our local junior team, and, you know, we just have a connection to him. He's from the Ottawa area. He's from Petawawa. So yeah. like, I mean, you know, like, I'm a bit biased, and I don't think this is a terrible signing for $700,000. Like, it's not that big of a deal. It's, he can play in the NHL if he needs to. He's not going to be like a 60, 70 point getter, but he'll take a roster spot if, you know, an injury comes up. But he's a capable hockey player, so if he plays in the NHL, he'll be fine.
Yeah, I like Pekka as a transition player. Like, he can play playmaker minutes. He can also play like a depth two-way game too. I like that about Pekka. He's a very versatile player, in my opinion. I might be biased from watching him, but like, I've watched a lot of Pekka for the years because he is from our hometown junior hockey team, Pembroke Thunder team. He played for that team for a couple of years. He was the captain of his NCAA team in Quinnipiac, or I'm saying that wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that's Quinnipiac.
Yeah, he was a captain for that team. He was one of their best players. I didn't know Pekka very well personally because he was a lot older than I was, but he babysat my best friend, my childhood best friend, for a long time, and I always heard stories about him loving hockey and all that. And I did meet the guy a couple times as a kid. I met the guy a few times throughout my life. I consider him, he recognizes me if he sees me. I definitely, I know him, and he definitely knows of me. Like, he recognizes me if he sees me, so that's great. But like, I wouldn't necessarily call him a close friend. I wouldn't call him a friend because I never had that connection with him. But I do love Pekka because he is, I guess you could say he's Pembroke's finest, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean,
that's awesome, guys. I love
he's
that.
Just a depth
story.
Signing. He's just a depth signing. He's not more than a depth forward.
Don't get me wrong. He's not going to be a superstar, but I love that the Senators are bringing in the guy that really, like, Pekka is the reason why, one of the reasons why I really started getting really into hockey. Like, it's, I always, like, I saw, I went, I watched him at a game, and I loved watching him play. And it's one of the things that really brought me into the game. So I like that the Senators are brought him in. Obviously traded for him. He's from the area, so he knows the area. And he's honestly, like, he's been captain for his NCAA team. He was the best player for his junior team. He's a great guy to have in the locker room. So maybe if he's not full-time NHL, he could also be a great guy in the NHL. Maybe we're captaincy in the NHL, help the young guys, you know? You never know. That's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, Derek, do you have any thoughts on it? I don't think you'd have as much to say as we do.
I don't have the same kind of connection. I'll say hashtag hockey bloodlines. How's that?
Yeah, there we go.
His father, Michael Pekka.
No relation.
No relation.
Oh, that's not his father?
No.
No. Oh, my goodness. Cut. Cut it all out.
No, that's not his dad. No. No relation.
I thought that was his father for sure.
No.
His mother.
Okay, well, never mind that.
Yeah, his mother is a retired teacher, and his dad, I'm not too sure what his dad did, but no relation to Michael Pekka.
Okay, so yeah, so that's how much I know about Pekka, aside from the fact that he played a few games with Ottawa last season. But yeah, no real opinion, guys.
Fair.
All right, Logan Shaw, he played in the Winnipeg system the last year. He played for Moosehead, he played for Winnipeg, he played a little bit, he was up and down the lineup. We signed him to a 2-year, $725,000. Two-way contract, AAV 725. I think I personally think this is an AHL signing. I'm not too sure. I don't know much about this guy, but I think this is more of an AHL signing. What do you guys think?
Yeah, 28 years old. He did actually play 35 games last year. So again, he could play if you need a place filler kind of thing. If people get injured, he could play in the NHL. But he's not going to be a point producer, just kind of a guy that will take up a roster spot on the fourth line if need be. I think he had 5 points in 35 games.
Yeah. So I'm not gonna spend as much time as I did on Pekka because I don't really know too much about him, but he just kind of adds, you know, experience onto that AHL lineup. And like you said, if an injury occurs or they make a trade and they need to fill a roster, he'll just be one of the guys that comes up and fills that hole until they can.
Yeah, he's a 28-year-old. He's huge. He's 6'3", 208. So,
yeah.
So probably a physical force out there.
Yeah, and he's going to be just going to bring experience on that AHL team that's probably going to be super young again. So,
yeah.
One sec here. I think I got a notification here. Currently, Thomas Gray signed with the Detroit Red Wings for 2 years at $3.6 million.
Yeah, Troy Stetcher signed with the Detroit Red Wings as well.
No, yeah, I didn't see that. But yeah, Thomas Grice is your goalie now. Okay, cool. But yeah, back to I think, yeah, I think Shaw is an NHL guy who can come up with an NHL injury or whatever, but you never know. So let's look at a couple names that have been linked to Senators. So one of these names that we have on the list, Craig Smith, obviously just signed with Boston, so forget about that. But yeah. I guess Tyler Johnson too, because he was put on the waivers yesterday, but he cleared waivers. So he wasn't picked up. So I guess he forgot about that too, or we could trade for him or whatever.
I wouldn't say forget about Tyler Johnson. I still think from Pierre LeBrun, there's still traction on him. It's just his contract is not very good.
Oh, it's not
good. Even he, like, it's a player I want the Senators to target, but it's still a little rough to swallow a four years left on $5 million. Even as a team that needs to spend to the cap, that's a lot of term left on a guy that's like the Tyler Johnson's caliber.
Here's my opinion on Tyler.
Yeah, and he's 30 years old too.
Yeah, so it's like I can see why the Sens didn't claim him on waivers, but I can I also question it at the same time. But I don't know if he screams that, like, I don't know. It's tough to say what the Sens are really thinking on that, because he has a $5 million cap hit, but he's only owed $3 million. So that's another screams Eugene Melnyk move, but. His term is just terrible. I think that's what's tearing a lot of teams off.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think here's my opinion on Tyler Johnson. Tyler Johnson is not a bad player. He's a top six player on a lot of teams. He was a top six player for Tampa Bay last year, and he won the cup. Like, he's a skilled hockey player, but that contract is scary as it is. The thing of Tyler Johnson is the only way I'd like to see Otto bring him in is if you don't bring back Anthony DeClaire and you don't really have that option for the top six right wing to help transition the young guys in, because sure, you want Connor Brown or Jake Batherson top six, maybe they're not ready yet full time, so you want that guy to help transition, you know. So that's the only way I would justify getting Tyler Johnson.
I think if his term was like 2 years, maybe they would have made took a shot at him. But 4 years, like, you'd be 34. Like, that's a lot.
He's got a full no.
Yeah, and you've got to think of the players that are going to be blocked if you bring in a Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of the Josh Norris and, you know, Logan Brown. If we still have hopes that Logan Brown is a center and Colin White and Tim Stützle.
Yeah, so, exactly. So
and we still have Tierney likely, and Anisimov's here for another year. So.
I think you're looking at him as a center, though. Like,
he is a center, though. He played.
Yeah, that's why I rhymed off the centers. Yeah,
yeah. He is a center, but he has played a lot of right wing ever since Braden Point has emerged. He's played more right wing than he's played center. So I guess you could use him as a wing.
Yeah,
but fair enough. That contract is still there. You don't really want him taking that spot up long term. Short term, if you want a guy to help transition the players, if he's got a weaker term on the contract, for sure you go for him. But at 4 years, I think it's a no go.
And I don't think the contract even movable. Like if they get him, like, even if, you know, like, all team people will be like, oh, they can just trade him. I don't know if that's even movable in like 2 years from now.
Oh, not really movable contract in this economy.
Yeah,
it would have negative value for sure. Like, yeah, you'd have to move him along with a draft pick or something.
So I think the term is what's scaring the Sens away from this one, but I don't really blame them, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with what you guys said. The player I like, I like the fact that you can slide him over to the right wing. We need a right winger. I like his overall abilities. I like, he can put up some points. He can score some goals for sure. He's had 29 goals twice in his career. I like the player overall. The fit is good for this season, maybe good for next season. And then after that, he's going to be blocking someone, and you'd have to buy him out if anything, because there wouldn't be an option there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about the couple of guys listed, though. There's a couple of guys off the list that also mentioned, but a guy that has been linked to the Senators has been Andreas Athanasiou. I don't know if he's signed since, but
not yet. No,
no. But I think that'd be an interesting move. He's a center who can also play wing, so he's a very versatile player in that sense. I think that if you bring Athanasiou in, he is a winger instead of a center, because Ottawa is, I'm not going to say rich center wise, but we have a lot of centers we have to develop. So you don't really want a center a free agent center taking away a spot from a Tim Stützle or a Josh Norris or even a Logan Brown if you consider him NHL caliber at this point. It all depends where you play Anthony Seau. If you sign Anthony Seau, I think he's a winner for a center, for the Senators at least.
Yeah, I think Anthony Seau is a name that I kind of circled out there because you're losing Anthony Duclair. So Anthony Seau is a player that can essentially replace what Anthony Duclair was. Exactly. You know, high risk, high reward type player who brings an insane amount of speed. But he's a player who needs to reinvent himself a little bit. He's 26 years old. It seemed like he broke out a couple of years ago. He put up 54 points for Detroit, and it looked like he was going to be their number two center. But then he dropped down in production, and he got traded recently to Edmonton and didn't really fit in there. So he's a player that has sort of the same kind of character flaws, if you will, that that Anthony Duclair is said to have. But he's a player that I had the chance to watch a ton in Barrie. When he was just a kid, just a prospect for the Barrie Colts. And man, was he insanely skilled. Like, he stood out like a sore thumb. Every game that I went to, I was there looking at other players specifically, and I couldn't help but notice Athens CU and his skill and his speed. It was just dynamic. Kind of a similar player to Alex Formanton, really. So he's a player that I think Ottawa should target on a short-term deal, and high risk, high reward. Why not?
Yeah, I agree. I think Anthony Seau is probably the main target I'd want right now on the players that I'm looking at. Just he fits the Senators mold. He's not like super old. He's 26. He brings, like you said, Derek, brings an insane amount of speed to the team. And I on a Senators team, I think he could be the number one center for a little bit. I know I don't think he's had a full number one center, but on a Senators team, he could be. And that would kind of give Stützle some chance to, you know, learn the North American game before he moved him to center. Sign him to a 2-year, $4 million contract, two years for $2 million a year type thing. That's what I would kind of around there. But obviously, then you need, I think he's a perfect player to sign at this point, but we'll see what happens.
Another thing with him, though, is I'm not going to talk just about Seau. I think other guys who in this situation, similar guys to go after would be a low-risk, high-reward player would be Alexander Galchenyuk. He is a UFA right now, if I remember correctly. I like Anthony Seau and Galchenyuk are in the same boat. They have the skill to be top six players in the NHL, even top line players. Just they've had a couple of missed opportunities. They haven't really produced to the level expected. And I think that they've been misused in some ways too.
I like that thought a lot, Jake. Galchenyuk, 26-year-old again. He was a really, really top caliber prospect for Montreal.
He's a really good player. Don't get me wrong. He just hasn't fit in anywhere he's played so far. And that is a deterrent factor for sure. But it also, Duclair didn't fit in anywhere he played. And he scored 20 goals this year and last year.
Yeah. And let me read something out for you guys for a second. Right. A stat line. Here it is. 5 years in a row, 46 points, 56 points, 44 points, and 51 points. Alex Galchenyuk.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just recently that he's kind of dropped off of a cliff a little bit in terms of production, but he's been bounced around so many times. I think he'll be a player that just wants a little bit of stability, and he needs an opportunity. So I really like that idea, Jake.
Yeah. I think what Galchenyuk is, sure, yes, he's put up 30 goals, but I feel like people bank on that too much. I consider him more of a playmaker. I consider him a sniper. Sure, he can get you 20 goals if he was in the right situation, but just in Montreal, it didn't really work out. He had a falling off of both coaches. He didn't really fit in with Arizona. He had a decent first year in Arizona, I guess you'd say. And nothing compared to what Domi did, so that's why he was frowned upon. But he didn't have a bad first year in Arizona, if I remember correctly. His second year in Arizona didn't go so well. He got traded to Pittsburgh, then he got traded to Minnesota. He hasn't had that stability. He hasn't had the time to learn a system and then play to that system. He hasn't had that opportunity. I think if he plays in Ottawa, he can play a significant role for the team. And I think he can really flourish if given the opportunity to.
Yeah, I mean, Galchenyuk, I'm just looking at his stats right now. He has 320 points in 549 games. So, I mean, that's not that bad for like a player for the Sens to sign. He can still produce offensively, which is what the Sens need. So, and he's a prove me player too. Like he just wants a shot for a team to take a chance on him and prove that he can be an NHL player. So,
yeah, exactly.
I think it's a great move. I really like that idea.
I would welcome Galchenyuk to the Senators with open arms, depending on the contract.
Oh, I don't think he's going to get anything over the moon in term this offseason.
Yeah, probably like a 1 year, 1 mil.
Two-year deal max. So maybe 2.5 max per year I think he's going to get. Maybe 3 depending.
Oh, I don't know about that, but we'll see.
I think that's rich for him. I think 2 to 2.5 is ideal for Galchenyuk as a proving contract.
Yeah, it could be worth the risk. I mean, there's a lot that this guy can do offensively if he does kind of hit that next step.
Yeah, and worst comes to worst, if he doesn't really fit in out of 1 to 2 year contract, you can trade him away and retain the contract.
Yep.
So in 2 years, go right ahead, you know? Anyways, other players that have suitable options that Derek was very – I'm going to thank you very quick, Derek, for – I usually make up the notes for the podcast and all, but I didn't have the time to the last couple of days. So Derek really came in clutch and made the notes for this episode. And a name that he threw in is, I find a little interesting. It's Tyler Toffoli.
This is the name that that people on Twitter are certainly talking about. He's more of a local kid, close to the area. He's a right wing, right shot. 28 years old, kind of foots the bill in terms of what Ottawa might be looking for. He really fit in with Vancouver. He played top 6 minutes, sometimes even over guys like Brock Besser. He had 10 points in 10 games with them. Just a player that obviously Sens fans want. Here's kind of the heartbreaker that I'll tell you with Toffoli is he's probably looking for a lot of term. His number is going to be much higher than some of these other guys we're talking about. So I see it as something that would shock me. It would be very unlikely, but yeah, we can have that, dissecting his game.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a nice little talking point. I don't know if I think he's a bit of a stretch, but I also think, you know, that local connection might, you know, that if he didn't want to come to Ottawa, that'd probably be the reason why. He's going to be a longer term kind of guy, probably around like $4 or $5 million a year, I think, just in today's market. I would expect a lot more if it wasn't where the situation of the world is right now, but I like the look of him. I like the look of, he brings a lot of, like, a scoring talent. He'd be an instant top six forward, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's it for this. I think Tyler Toffoli could be a decent option. Like, I don't see him as a long-term option, but he could be he's wicked good. Don't get me wrong, but he could definitely help players develop. But I don't think, him being 28, I don't see him being a core member of a rebuilding team just for, like, he's not old, don't get me wrong. But once Otto is back to being in the playoffs, he's going to be old. Like, he's going to be considered older. He's going to be maybe 32, maybe. Like, that's when you start becoming old in the NHL, 32, maybe 33. That's when I think Otto can start contending again. And I don't think he's going to be at the same level at that point.
Do you think they're 5 years out from contending?
Not 5 years from contending. They're going to make the playoffs in a couple of years, but I don't think they're going to be seriously contenders right away, you know?
Yeah, I can believe that. Okay.
I'm with you guys on that too.
Just like how Tampa took so long to win a cup, just how Toronto is taking a while. Like, Toronto's the last couple of years, but just because you make the playoffs doesn't necessarily make.
No, I know. That's what I thought you meant by saying contenders. Just make the playoffs. And I was like, 5 years to make the playoffs? I hope not, because I don't know if Sens fans. I don't know if Sens fans can put up with that long. But
you have to be patient.
Yeah,
another year or two, then we start making the playoffs. That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree. or at least fight for a playoff spot. Like, I don't think we'll be bottom of the pool much longer.
Exactly.
Yeah, what are you guys expecting? That's another good point. What are you guys expecting out of this season positionally? Like, where do you think, looking at the roster today, assuming they don't acquire anything that's going to kind of tip the scales, what do you guys see out of this coming season?
I'll go first, if you may. I think that Ottawa is – I think this year is a transition year. I don't think Ottawa is bottom of the pack this year, but I don't think they're playoff either. I could say – I'm going to say not late – early 20s, maybe late teens in terms of standings. I could see them range between like the 17th and the 23rd overall spot in the league. That's what I think around there. I don't think they're going to – they're maybe 10, maybe 17 overall, right? Because 16 first top teams in the playoffs. So I guess middle, not playoffs, but not bottom of the league, you know, middle of the pack for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I still think this is a year there. They don't like, I still think it's a kind of a development year. So I think probably like bottom eight, but I do want to see some improvement. Like if I can, like, you know, if I see more points and they're still like near the bottom, I'd be okay with that. But
exactly.
I just want to see a step forward, but I don't think they're going to be right there. I think from like eighth to fifth, like last in the league, like top 10 at least, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly where I see it. I think we want to see some improvement, but then, you know, I look at the right side of their defense, and then I look at some of the experience that they've lost up front. And I'm kind of cautious to say that they're going to improve at all. They could end up being, you know, right where they were in the lottery conversation in the bottom five. And that's kind of where I see it as it stands right now. There's still a lot of time before they drop the puck on the new season. But I don't think they're going to be doing anything, like I said, that's going to tip the scales heavily in their favor. So you're interjecting just a lot of young players, and hopefully it goes well for them. But I don't see them moving up a whole lot.
Yeah, next year's a year they're taking a bigger step. Maybe not like enough, but definitely next year I'm gonna have a lot more higher expectations than this season. Like if they finish dead last this year, I would be like, all right, that's like, I'd be a little rattled, but I'd be like, I mean, you look at the lineup; it's not too good.
Yeah.
So,
and we can start looking at prospects for next year again.
Yeah, Turati or
Craig
Clark or
yep.
It's gonna be excited again, but we'll see.
Yeah,
and I think that's it from us. On a leaving note, I will just say that I just got this tweet right now. Tory Krug on the Bruins offer. I'm reading a direct quote here. It was pulled from me. I did not have an offer when they offered me a year ago. They offered him a year ago, but they didn't offer him this year. I don't know what I'm expected to do. Just being blunt and being honest with you. Most people don't share that side of it, but it is what it is. So Boston didn't even offer Tory Krug a contract. What?
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably just a victim of the cap, to be honest. Like their decor is taking a serious hit. No, like I think Charles is a free agent. Krug's gone now. Their top defenseman is Charlie McAvoy. So,
I'm not sure what Sweeney is planning here with the Bruins, but like you said, they're kind of a cap crunch team. They don't have a lot to play with, but Tory Krug, by all accounts, is a top four defenseman and a really, really good one at that. So it is a bit of a head scratcher for Bruins fans, I'm sure.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't make too much sense. I mean, that's like, if you're not offering a contract to the person, I mean, like I read that they had a contract on the table and then it got pulled like near the last minute. So I don't know if Pietrangelo or, you know, another top D man notified Boston that they'd be in the running, and then they're like, no shit, we can't afford Krug. But I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a head scratcher. There's been a lot of head scratching moves this offseason for sure. A lot of the Sens aren't the only ones that are getting head scratching moves, at least this time around. So
yeah, and the Bruins spend money on Craig Smith.
Yeah, like that's
like $1 million.
That's a hefty chunk of money. I was not expecting that.
Yeah,
so I mean, and then you got the Rangers signing Jack Johnson to what he got signed, you know what I mean? Like A lot of bad money's getting thrown around this time around. So I wouldn't be too quick to jump on the Declare. I'm gonna bring that up again, but we'll see what Declare gets.
I don't think he's. I think he's kidding himself if he thinks he's getting $5 million for 5 years.
Yeah, I see him getting maybe a $3 million a year for 2 years, $3 million a year, maybe.
Yeah, which is what they offered him.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know. We'll see what happens, I guess. But
yeah,
Declare is not ruled out from the Sens yet, so we'll wait. We'll monitor that situation.
Yeah.
Jake, you got anything to add?
No, that's all really for me there. That's all for me. I guess that's it from us tonight. Let's give a little bit of a conclusion. I want to thank you, Derek, so much for coming aboard the podcast once again for a second week in a row. Great to have another hockey mind on the podcast of Alex and I. Again, you're welcome anytime. You're welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I had a lot of fun chatting with you.
Thanks again. Yeah, I always love hearing your take. So appreciate you coming on there.
Thanks, guys.
So I'm not too sure if I mentioned the Twitters earlier, but I'll mention them now. Our podcast Twitter is at SomeSense. My Twitter is at Jacob Rozier. Alex's Twitter is at AlexLongwa15. And Derek's Twitter is at DLee075. Again, like last episode, the Twitters will be in the podcast description. And hopefully, if everything goes according to plan, you guys will see the new logo as part of the podcast. Sure, I changed the profile picture on the Twitter, but I don't know if that goes around all the and I changed on our podcast host, but I don't know if that'll change everything else. Hopefully it does. If not, I'll figure something out. Contact IT or something. But yeah, that's it from us. And again, hopefully you guys heard the theme song.
Have a nice night, guys. Go Sens, go.